The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. June 26th is a Support Don't Punish Global Day of Action. Events and activities related to Support Don't Punish will go on all around the globe. We'll hear about this year's Global Day of Action later in the show. But first, on June 3rd, Correlation, European Harm Reduction Network, held a webinar entitled Outreach Work During the COVID-19 Epidemic, Exchange of Experiences and Paths Forward. A panel of experts shared insights on recent developments in their harm reduction practices, on the challenges experienced by their communities, and on the impact of COVID-19 on operations. We're going to hear from some of the participants. Jane Mountney, PhD, is head of the Public Health Unit at the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction.
I would like to just do two things. One is just very briefly highlight a few of the resources and activities that people may be interested in. And second, just to share top-level results from a very recent study and hopefully the bits that will be interesting for people here from outreach background. So first of all, the EMCDDA has set up some information resources. We've got a hub, which is COVID and drugs related, where we've put examples mainly of guidelines, procedures, health-related information that have come in from a range of countries so that everybody can access, download, and not have to reinvent everything from scratch. So if you're looking to develop some, you know, service-level procedures or what have you, check out the website, the Resource Hub, and you may find some things in your language, hopefully, that's interesting. The second thing we've done, a bit like this initiative, is we've set up a series of webinars on key topics. So we've had two so far, one on services and one more general, how people's first responses. And they're open to everybody. The next one is tomorrow, and it's on prevention and impact of COVID. And then there will be one on the 17th, which will be COVID use and harms. And there will be one on the 1st of July, which is on darknet markets. So, again, you can check on our website. Everybody's welcome. It will be great. I have got an ice cream van that's just come down the street, so I might have some background music just to... I'm not sure there's anything I can do about that. So just enjoy my voice floating over the...
That's Portugal.
I'm in Norway. I'm in Bergen. This is. I'm not sure we need the ice creams, but hey. Okay, the second topic is just to share some results of a very recent study. We have done what we call a trend spotter study, which is a quick, rapid assessment methodology where we bring together all the data we can, including expert opinion, and we try and get the voices of frontline professionals in there to try and understand a topic rapidly. We looked at services. What's the impact of COVID on health services, both harm reduction and drug treatment? That's what I'd just like to share one or two of our findings before you go ahead. And what I realise is this is really fresh data, and it's from April, but it's out of date already. And I think that's what's really interesting, is if I was doing a focus group with people here today, I would be asking questions, how is it now coming out of lockdown? Where I think what we've picked up is people going into lockdown and containment measures. So I think we need to bear that in mind. Things are moving so quickly that our questions need to change, not just the answers. And we are needing to look for the new methods to pick things up. So this report came out last month. We based it on three online surveys, a web survey with people who use drugs, and we got a good response. We had about 11,000 people responding, and we did some online facilitated groups with experts. Top level, what did we find? I mean, there's no big groundbreaking findings to say that, as with all health services, we saw a big drop in the provision availability of treatment and harm reduction provision across Europe in general. So we saw closures and reduced availability. in all countries, in all areas of harm reduction, drop-ins, needle and syringe provision, drug consumption rooms, shelters and outreach. So drops, closures, reduction in availability reported across the board. Some services, as you well know, stayed open, sometimes against the odds. And for those that were still running, essentially everyone was reporting we have to very quickly put into place new hygiene measures and new social distancing measures. Those were the two big immediate changes that services were reporting. The other one was, and I think again, like us all, was an increase in the use of new technologies. So drug services, harm reduction services were getting the same kind of challenges. We did ask specifically, and I'll just highlight one or two of the challenges that came up from respondents. So particularly at the start of the crisis and containment was access to materials, particularly protective equipment. The issue of educating clients about the risks was repeatedly mentioned. And particularly for some groups, there were issues around, it was hard to get the social distancing messages across. That was a report. Working with more or the particularly marginalised client groups, services were moving into perhaps slightly different areas to those they'd been focusing on, or more basic hygiene, food, housing issues came to the fore. So they were working in those areas more than before. Managing infected clients, COVID, this was rare. Not many services were reporting a high level of infected clients with COVID, but some were, and there the issues were more around quarantine and how to implement those sorts of measures. Staffing shortages across the board was a problem for different reasons. Sometimes it was around rotas and changes in the actual shifts. Sometimes it was about quarantine and people having to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Childcare issues for many when kids out of school. But also in some services, staff were moved and taken out and put into other provision. Enrolling new clients was an issue, particularly for some of the drug treatment services, and particularly where they needed a face-to-face contact at the start. That became more challenging. And broadly managing demand for substitution treatment. Sometimes it was that there was increased demand, services are closed, the ones remaining had to struggle. Supply of medicines was also an issue for a few countries. Just briefly then, service demand. I'm just looking here at the harm reduction issues that came up. Where unlike treatment, harm reduction services were more likely to have no change in the demand or actually an increase, whereas treatment, it tended to be a drop. New requests was one of the issues, and these were often around things like types of requests. So that whereas before, more client, here was about food, hygiene, and maybe income. So poverty, where people no longer had their tourists and sources of income, for example. Sometimes it was new types of services. So the service was demand was around low threshold OST, for example. There were some examples of new clients. So in some areas, more drug-using sex workers were coming to services, people coming out of prisons and using services. So there were some new clients, completely new, and some new needs. One of the things that's come up a few times is around clients struggling with alcohol and benzodiazepine issues and people working around support for anxiety, etc. So some slight differences reported there. Services adapting. I mean, and I think this was a big finding, how quickly the services that stayed alive adapted and their flexibility. And there was more generally a move from face-to-face to more online services, from centre-based, often to try and avoid gatherings, to a range of flexible options. Home deliveries of equipment and medications, postal deliveries, some self-service spots were set up in some countries where people could help themselves. And more takeaways generally. So just to summarise, for those services stayed open, what our study showed, there was a fairly impressive response, to be honest. And there were quite a lot of positives reported. We were perhaps surprised initially at how many people were fairly positive in terms of what had happened, how they'd been able to innovate and adapt, and particularly about the new low threshold services that were were coming up as a response. Also positives around solidarity with clients in terms of responding to the pandemic situation, the staffs and clients working together. Negatives, clearly the closures and concerns about reopening and plans for reopening. There were concerns around the delays in HIV and hepatitis C testing flagged, and also disruption in treatment for infectious diseases. Issues around drug-related deaths and certainly delays in confirmation, no autopsies taking place, so a loss of the flow and our understanding in terms of overdose deaths, what's actually happening. And I think the other thing was about there were some concerns around unintended consequences and that the fact that they're unknown. So some people were a little bit concerned about the unsupervised access to OST, concerns about overdoses, but we didn't have the information one way or another yet to know. Into the future, last point here. Into the future, we asked people, you know, what were their thoughts at this stage? And many saw a window of opportunity and said, while it had been hard and there had been many problems, this was perhaps for services a window of opportunity, particularly in terms of new service models and hold on to the things that were positive and that were seen to be an improvement. And also particularly in terms of new technologies and how can we continue to use the new technologies in our work and the telemedicine and e-health. That was a sort of rapid tour of our first round of findings. There's a report. Anybody that would like to know a little bit more, you can find on our website. And we're deep in the second wave now, which is on harms and use. Just to say there'll be a report that we're writing at the moment that will hopefully come out in a couple of weeks on specifically looking at COVID and impact on drug use and drug-related harms. So that's where we are now. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was Dr. Jane Mountney, head of the Public Health Unit at the European Union's Drug Agency, the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction. She was speaking on a webinar organized recently by Correlation European Harm Reduction Network on the subject of outreach work during COVID-19. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now let's hear from Sarah Woods. She's a policy officer at the Mainline Foundation in Amsterdam.
I'll try to summarize non-outreach work as briefly as possible. In the Netherlands, we have looked at the changes in the drug market, and we haven't heard any consistent big changes in the drug market, as in availability or quality or price changes. So some say it gets harder to some say it doesn't, some say it gets more expensive, some say more cheaply. So there's no consistent changes in that. As for treatment and accessibility, a lot has, listening to all your other stories, we've had a very quite a consistent availability of everything. Of course, things have changed, and I'll elaborate on that a little bit, but our heroin maintenance treatment, which we have in the country, has continued. OST has continued, and many have, as others have mentioned as well, have now received it as a take home, so they get it for the week, whereas they wouldn't beforehand. Which some appreciate, but others, I think it was Portugal that mentioned that some were really keen to get their supplies for a week. But now, what you do see is that the contact is really missed. And that is, I think, a major thing that we've seen for ourselves, for our own outreach work, but also what we've heard from outreach workers all throughout the country. That has been a big challenge. Moro said it as well, you know, we need that physical contact, that face-to-face contact with people. You can call people, but some people you can't reach over the phone, and some conversations you can't have over the phone. It's very, you know, you get these very short emergency conversations you can have, but it's hard to really connect with people, and it's hard to really see how people are doing. We've heard that from several outreach workers throughout the country. And I think it's a good practice worth mentioning that for this reason, there are quite a lot of outreach workers that started or even never stopped seeing several of their clients face to face all throughout the situation. And it was something that we heard more and more, especially in May, we heard more and more outreach workers picking that up again, that they really made an effort, you know, just see people in front of, you know, go to their house and just meet them outside their house, go for a walk with them. I heard a beautiful story of a person, a client who had found a plexiglass screen in the trash and had it installed it himself in his house so that he can have could have face-to-face contact with people. So that was, I think, a very important change. And also a major change in our work at Mainline. We the past few months, together with the Trimbos Institute, which is a major drug research institute in the Netherlands, and the MDAG, which is the Drug User Union, we combined our forces these past months, and we did a lot of over-the-phone signaling among harm reduction professionals, but also among the community. We have several, we call them our drug scouts. We have several scouts throughout the country. And over the phone, we asked professionals working with the community, but also the community themselves, what is it that you see? What do you see on the drug market? What problems do you encounter? How is your work? What challenges are there? But also, what are your best practice successes or what's working well? So that forced us to shift, but we're also not we're not a primary care provider. But we shifted a lot to more signaling and reporting to other professionals, but also to the Ministry of Health. So we've turned more towards that role the past 2 months, rather than drug education and referral. Some good practices, well, the one that I mentioned is that people really made an effort to do face-to-face contact. I think there's a good practice, not necessarily outreach work, but good practice, I think, is those who have really made an effort to continue the work programs. It has been a major impact on people's lives that the work programs were discontinued for income reasons, but also for daily structures and life. We've heard some very good situations all throughout the country where people continued to pay, or organizations continued to pay even when work was not possible, but also where they started cleaning the streets and making it possible to get income through that. Let's see. Now my neighbor starts fixing his house. I hope you don't hear this. as for drug education and support, like I said, we did most of it over the phone in the past 2 months. But now, since this month, we're doing more outreach work again. So we're going to other cities and seeing people face to face. Of course, all corona-proof, keeping distance and those things. And we've also we also do outreach for men who have sex with men and who do chemsex. And for this group, we now offer an online support group rather than in our office. And quite well attended. And we also see a bit more men coming to our chat, and so coming to the chat and asking for advice there. There we see that the digitalization is having effect and making online services more interesting for people who use drugs as well.
That was Sarah Woods, policy officer at the Mainline Foundation. She was speaking on a webinar organized recently by Correlation European Harm Reduction Network on the subject of outreach work during COVID-19. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now here's Tony Duffin, CEO of the Anna Liffey Drug Project in Dublin.
It's important to me to understand that this is kind of a micro, I think it's like a microcosm of what happened. We aren't the only service that responded. I just want to acknowledge some of the services in a moment. But I guess during COVID-19 crisis, as it was from March onwards, the leadership from the state actually was very, very good, from the HSE, our health service executive in Dublin, in the North City and County Community Health Office, and in the Midwest in Limerick, in the Community Health Office there. The state, the HSE, really responded well and gave us leadership. In terms of partnership, we worked with, Cool Mind Therapeutic Community, Fingless Addiction Support Team, San Kalpa, DePaul, Ireland, Chrysalis, Midwest Simon, Novus. And it's important to me for you to understand that we worked in partnership with higher threshold services as well as harm reduction services. And of course, it took a lot for the team at Analiffy to respond. And we did, the team were fantastic, and we stayed out on outreach from the beginning. We stayed and we worked in the streets, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But the first question I was asked was, which COVID-19 regulations are currently in place, in your city? I'll talk about Dublin at the moment, but this was across Ireland. From mid-March, regulations were brought in, and we were gradually, slowly brought into lockdown. They stayed in place until around the 18th of May, where they began to be reopened the economy, and we'll have more easing of restrictions next week. In terms of our client group, we were asked to, I suppose we already worked with about 80% of the people we worked with were homeless, and our focus turned to the homeless population in Dublin and in the Midwest in Limerick. And we couldn't keep our services, our fixed site services open, because we simply couldn't guarantee people's safety. So we moved out into outreach. We already did outreach services. Outreach has always been very important to us, but we solely went on to outreach. And one of the things that we noticed early on was that the people we were serving really didn't understand what was happening. Whilst there was quite significant information going around for the wider population, our client group really didn't understand, why were people wearing masks? Why were the shops shut? Why were the services that they normally go to closed? So we spent a lot of time explaining to them what was going on, and what access, and help them to access housing and to access treatment. I think the state's response of quite significant response of providing housing for people in terms of cocooning units, homeless services, isolation units for people who are homeless was phenomenal. In the early days, our job was to reach out to people, do needle exchange, get people the equipment they needed, but then also to help the clinicians, the doctors and the nurses, to assess people who were over the phone while we were in the street, and assess the people who had two symptoms of COVID-19. And if they, the doctor said or the nurse said, listen, you need to get them to an isolation unit, we would either arrange for them to get there or we would bring them there ourselves. So we recognised very early on that actually the public health response to COVID was a priority, and that to stop the spread of it, and actually harm reduction was now secondary to the public health response. But obviously those two things work well together. In terms of how we did that, we obviously maintained social distancing in Ireland. We were asked to keep 2 metres apart. We maintained hand washing, cough etiquette, and the appropriate use of PPE. So we didn't wear masks, etc. If someone had symptoms, we asked them to wear PPE. And that was effective in terms of our outreach work. We were able to, nobody within the team contracted COVID-19, I'm pleased to say. So that was what we were at. Now, I suppose I'll go back to what Jane was saying at the very beginning. Now we've had to adapt further. As the economy opens up and services begin to come back online, we are now providing addiction services on outreach and in reach into the accommodation service, because very few people are actually at the moment in Dublin and Limerick. So we are really supporting people in the environment they are. So we're going to be doing addiction work, harm reduction work, things like community detox, relapse prevention, those kind of pieces with people who are housed. So that's what we're working with the HSE, the Health Service Executive now. And I guess the next question was, how do outreach services adapt to these regulations? Well, as I said, response to lockdown means that people we work with are housed. There was a really good outcome in terms of methadone on the streets for people who are homeless and people who are opiate dependent. And we went from a 12-week wait for methadone treatment to a 2 to 3 day wait to get people on to methadone. And as I've already mentioned, the work we did around assessments of symptoms. And there was just a great piece of work in terms of the joint work we did with the existing services, who also had to adapt and redeploy their teams. And then how does the impact the situation of people who use drugs and other marginalised groups like homeless people? So delivering harm reduction services on an outreach basis were an essential part of the public health response during the early days of the crisis and continue to be so. And while services will adapt, the delivery of services on an outreach basis will continue to be important. So I think what I'm saying is that it was essential that outreach services stayed functional, that harm reduction was available, and low threshold services were adaptable to get people into housing, into treatment, into drug treatment, and into treatment for COVID-19. So I will leave it as that. Is that okay?
That's okay, and it was very good overview, I think. Did you say that methadone was easier accessible for people in the waiting list, shorter waiting times to get into the program?
Yes, so we had a 12-week waiting list prior to COVID-19, and during COVID-19, at the very beginning, the caps... general practitioners and clinics have caps as to how many patients they could have, but those caps were lifted and more people could get on to methadone, which is great. And we hope that we will maintain that beyond there. We certainly, at the beginning, I think we worked obviously within the perspective of what was possible, but I think during COVID-19 at the beginning, there was a real sense that, you know, do something, don't be let the best be the enemy of the good. You know, you're going to make mistakes, but do something. We were allowed to take risks and we were allowed to work differently.
That was Tony Duffin, CEO of the Anna Liffey Drug Project in Dublin. He was speaking on a webinar organized recently by Correlation European Harm Reduction Network on the subject of outreach work during COVID-19. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.